Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Wednesday, May 15, 2019. This is the Transportation Conference Committee. We will be taking up a number of items for discussion and passage this afternoon. Just to let you know, before we take a break, I'm sure that Chairman Hornstein will want to talk to you about the next conference committee hearing when he will have the gavel. And I'd also alert you to the fact that we've got a hard stop at about 5 o'clock because of prior commitments for some of us. So with that, just so that the members can follow, we're going to take up the A43 amendment first. Then I am going to go to the sheet that is in your packet. States provisions for consideration on May 15, 2019, prepared by Alexis Stengel, Senate Counsel, dated May 15th at 2:31 p.m. That's the document that I intend to follow. With that, members, I believe that when we left yesterday, we had discussed on the A43 amendment all of the sections, but we did have some further discussion that we had to address on section 22, which involved farm work driving permits. And that issue is one that Senator Dibble had some thoughts on. So before we offer the A43 amendment, I'll go to Senator Dibble and have him talk to us about that aspect of A43. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my suggestion on this language, so this has to do with extending the radius which those who have a restricted license and are permitted to drive for the purpose of performing farm work. At present, the restrictions are to only within a radius of 20 miles of the farmhouse, of their parents' farmhouse, and prohibits their ability to enter into a city of the first class. And the proposal, there's some additional language that I don't understand, but the basic idea is to extend the radius to 40 miles, which is well and fine. The discussion that we had in committee this year, this is an item that was, of course, taken up last year in this form. This year, when it came up again in the Senate, the conversation we had was, and the motion that was successfully made was to amend out the prohibition on allowing those with these restricted farm licenses from driving in cities of the first class. I was joined in that by Senator Senjum. The amendment was offered and was successful. And the reason or the rationale was that those who are doing farm work, running errands for their parents that's related to farm work, may well want to go into a city of the first class, like Rochester or Minneapolis or Duluth, to pick up something, you know, for the farm that they might need at a place that may just be there and not somewhere else in that 40-mile radius. I was going to actually bring in a map and, you know, find one of my hardware stores and draw a line 40 miles out and prove that there are actually farms within 40 miles of my district, but trust me, there are. There are none in my district, but there are things that people might want to buy in my district. That argument, of course, can be made much better by Senator Senjum, surrounded by farms and townships and the like. And so that was the idea. So should I make a motion now or pause for questions?
You have an oral motion that I understand right. You wish to make on the A43. Why don't right. you make that motion, sure. And then we can discuss it.
Great. So if folks have the A43 in front of them, what my motion would be, an oral amendment simply to put a period after the word farmhouse on line 6.29, strike the remainder of that line, and then strike all of the language on line 6.30, which would have the effect of striking the language, however, in no case may a person holding the restricted license operate a motor vehicle in a city of the first class.
Ms. Stengel, would you address the oral amendment by Senator Senjum as to whether or not it accomplishes what he wishes to accomplish?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I believe if the intent is to get rid of the reference to the first cities of the first class, that amendment it does that.
Discussion by members as to the oral amendment. Representative Harkless.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having grown up on a farm and for a period of time carried around a broken farm part in my back seat, just to make sure I was always legal, I'm not opposed to the amendment. I just think that the reason behind the amendment was that these are less experienced drivers who may or not be as experienced with heavy traffic as others. And that was probably the reason it's there. I guess I'm not opposed to the amendment. Drivers and their parents can make these decisions. And if there are farm parts available in Senator Dipple's district, I certainly want them to be available to the farmers that need them.
East Mighty, area farmstead.
Yeah, mighty fine farm implement shops in my
Leak Park.
Further discussion on the oral amendment to the A40. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the oral amendment to the A43 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. We are now on the A43 amendment as adopted. Any further discussion? Any further discussion on the A43 as amended? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A43 amendment as amended, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. With that, members, we'll now go to the list of items to be discussed. Members, do you have in mind the list that I'm working on or off of? If anybody doesn't, please bring it to my attention. The provisions for consideration, May 15th, 2019. The date stamp is 5:15 at 2:31 p.m. Anyone that does not have that document? Looks to me like everyone has it. Okay. We'll begin with item number one, which is the wheelchair securement issue that appears in the House version of our bill at sections 99 through 103 and 137 A. Discussion to the wheelchair securement issue. Mr. Burris, you want to explain that, please?
Mr. Chair and members, this is a Department of Public Safety provision originally and is found on page R-132, House Sections 99 through 103, and then there's a portion of Section 137, that's paragraph A. And this would revise the standards on special transportation or transportation services that involve public transportation and wheelchairs to require alignment and meeting the requirements of the Americans with Disabilities Act, as well as specify that securement devices and lifts would need to meet federal requirements that are laid out in federal regulations. It would also establish requirements on drivers to ensure proper securement and adjustment of seatbelt assemblies and securement of devices, when they're not in use and provide for level change and boarding devices being inspected as part of the annual inspection process. And then there's a repealer of language that's made obsolete by the other revisions in the statutes governing wheelchair securement.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Discussion. Senator Rerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question basically for Section 299A12, and when we talked about this being specialty transportation, is that meaning this is Metro Mobility specific, or is this public transportation? I'd just like a little more information as to who this is referring to.
Mr. Burris, can you help us with that?
Mr. Chair and members, it's not specific just to Metro Mobility. I'll have to do a little bit of refreshing of my memory to lay out, because there's some definition aspects that aren't being modified in the language. I just need to look things up a little bit.
I am told that Colonel Langer is in. Oh, there you are. I've been looking for you. Colonel Langer, could you come forward and help us, please? I must have been staring right at you and didn't see you. Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record. And if you could address Senator Rerich's question for him, please.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Matt Langer. I have the honor and privilege of serving as the chief of the State Patrol, and I can try to do my best to answer questions on this kind of lesser-known piece of language in existing rulemaking and proposed to be in law. So, Mr. Chair, Senator, the question, I think, if I remember right, is who does it apply to? And the simple way to explain that, unless Mr. Burris has different information, is it would be anyone who's not a private carrier. So a private vehicle wouldn't apply, but a nursing home transporting patients, Metro Mobility would apply, a private vendor who's hauling those with disabilities would have to comply with the ADA requirement rather than the rule, which brings it in conformance with the ADA in a more transparent fashion that's easier for everyone to understand the exact requirement to keep those individuals safe while they're being transported.
Senator Rerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then this is specifically for vehicles, specialty vehicles, not, say, an MPC bus, a vehicle of that nature.
Colonel Langer.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator, correct. It's for vehicles specifically designed to transport those with disabilities, specifically wheelchairs, in a way that's consistent with the ADA and safe for those individuals to be transported.
Any further discussion regarding the wheelchair securement provision? Any further discussion? Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Senator Hall moves adoption of Section 99 dash, or I should say, one through 103 and Section 137A of the House language. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion is adopted, and the provision is adopted. The next item on the agenda is the Minnesota State Academy's sign. That would be item number two. Maybe we could have Ms. Stengel walk us through that. And I would indicate, members, that this is something that Senator Jasinski is pretty interested in, and I think Representative Cagle was too, if I'm not mistaken. Senator Jasinski is in the conference committee for education. If we get hung up and need him, we'll reel him in, but let's see what happens. Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Looking at the side-by-side, it's section one, page R-170, House section 132, Senate section 128. The two sections are largely similar. It requires MnDOT to post signs on I-35 for the State Academy for the Deaf and the State Academy for the Blind. The difference is, in the Senate language, the commissioner is required to pay for the signs within existing appropriations.
Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
President Tappy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to make note, do we expect Senator Jasinski back here today? Because the reason why I'm asking is because he had, after the meeting yesterday, he learned some information that changed what he had talked about yesterday, and so I'd like to hear that from him again, and if we could hold this off until that he gets here to convey that information, I would appreciate that.
No problem, Representative. We will hold on this particular item and send a text to Senator Jasinski and ask him to come down. He's in the building. I just don't know where.
Perfect. Thank
you. Not a problem. Not a problem. Let's move on then to the next item, which would...
Yeah.
Senator Jasinski, where's your coat?
You're in the house. We're good with that.
Senator Jasinski, we are on item number two, which is the Minnesota State Academy signs. Ms. Stengel has walked through it very briefly and pointed out that the difference in your version is that the commissioner would be required to pay for the signage out of operating funds or current funds. And Representative Kafke had a question. Representative Kafke.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chair. Senator Jasinski, you said you came up to me yesterday after the meeting and said there was some different information.
Yes, I was incorrect when I made my statement about thank you, Mr. Chair, that the academies would be the only one. Other colleges do pay for that out of their own as well. So I was incorrect in my statement yesterday, but would still request the MnDOT to accept those signage costs at their own in their own department costs. But it's obviously up for discussion here today.
Representative Tapke, anything
further? Yeah, I don't know if, because the department had said yesterday that there's basically no other schools or institutions that are handled like this, as is in the Senate language. And I don't know if it's setting bad precedent for us to be telling MnDOT to pay for these kinds of things. I just wanted to have a conversation about that, as Senator Jasinski said, and just want to talk about if that makes sense to single out one thing, even though it's a really great academy and program and everything. I just don't know if that sets bad precedent.
The only thing I would add, Representative, is that this particular academy is unique in the state of Minnesota. I don't think you could find anything else that is even remotely the same. Both the department and the academy are funded with state dollars, and you know, taking out one purse to pay for the other really doesn't make much sense. And very honestly, I suppose if we do set a precedent in taking care of this particular state academy, it might be a good idea. That'd be my only thoughts. Further discussion on this matter. Representative Hornstein,
no, thank you. Shay, I just was interested in knowing what the options are really the academy itself versus MnDOT. That's really the question here. And I think, as Senator Jasinski pointed out, they're both state institutions.
That is correct.
Senator Jasinski, do you have a motion?
I would make the motion that we accept Senate language of Section 128. I believe that's the correct motion.
Which would be the Senate?
Would be the Senate version, correct.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of Senator Jasinski's motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion passes. The provision is adopted. Now we can go on to the port development assistance issue. Ms. Stengel, you want to? Oh, Krista? Ms. Boyd, you want to tell us about that?
Mr. Chair and members, the port development assistance provision is actually missing a couple citations. We're actually going to start on page R4 of the side-by-side. It's a cancellation, but it's also a reappropriation of that amount in fiscal year 2020, so we'd have to talk about them as a pair, really. So the appropriation is starts on the bottom of page R4. It's lines 511 through 518 on the next page in the House language, and 423 to 430 on the Senate side. And the gist of this provision is that there was an appropriation made under port development from the general fund to Winona, and $160,000 of that is left, and we'll cancel at the end of fiscal year 19, but the Port Authority would still like that to finish the project they're working on. So this cancels the $160,000 in 19 and reappropriates it in 20. The House and Senate language are virtually identical. There's just a stylistic difference, which, you know, that's up to the members, but staff can work that out as well. That's on 511 and 423. The House says fiscal year 2020, and the Senate says in the first year, and that's, you know, has the same effect. And then the second part of this provision is on page R26, and that is on line 24.1 for the House and 17.17 for the Senate, and that just shows the actual cancellation of the $160,000 in fiscal year 19 from the appropriate chapter of law.
Mr. Lee, you have anything to add? Ms. Boyd, Mr. Lee, you have a recommendation for the committee. Sounds like it's pretty simple fix.
Mr. Chair, not
Ms. Boyd.
If this is to be accepted, not to be biased, but I would recommend the Senate language.
Mr. Lee, your position on accepting. Any further discussion? Do I hear a motion?
I'll move that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chair Hornstein moves acceptance of Article 1, Section 5 of the Senate version. All those in favor, please signify by saying. Ms. Stengel is going to state the motion and put it in proper form.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The motion would be to adopt Senate Article 1, Section 5 on page R26, as well as Senate lines 4.23 to 4.30 on R4 to R5.
Any further discussion to the motion? And I should ask Chairman Hornstein, is that your motion?
Yes, on behalf of Representative Pulaski.
All those in favor of the motion, please state by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion is adopted, and the provision is adopted. The next matter on our agenda is the driver's license emergency contacts provision. I would like to point out to the committee members and to the folks in the audience, we have with us today the subject of this provision, Mitchell Raji, who is responsible for coming forward with the idea. And we have also with us Representative Moeller and Senator Isaacson, who took this up for Mitchell and got it through the legislature. So, Mitchell, welcome to the conference committee. It's good to see you again. I remember you from the Senate floor, so welcome. Members, we could maybe have Mr. Burris, would you like to explain this provision, please?
Mr. Chair and members, this provision is in two sections. The main language is found on page R118, House Section 81. There's also a corresponding conforming change on House Section 79. The provision would allow for, by request, an applicant for a driver's license or an ID card to specify emergency contact information for up to three emergency contacts. It would also allow for changes, additions, or deletions of that information without a transaction fee being charged, and it classifies the data as private data on individuals.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. And
sorry, Mr. Chair, just to clarify on that, oh, on that data classification, that would be the classification of the data, but would allow for sharing of the emergency contact information with law enforcement for purposes of notifying those emergency contacts regarding an emergency.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. And members, as I understand it, there is an amendment that we have available to us, Ms. Stengel. And this amendment involves a Tennyson notice. If members have, after Ms. Stengel has explained it, have any questions, DPS is in the audience and come down and talk to us about it. Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You'll see on the sheet we're working from the grid, you'll see on that line 4, in the very right column under proposed changes, there is a proposed change on R118 to House Section 81. It would be on line 111.6 after the period, insert the text that's there, and the text is, the request must be made on a form prescribed by the commissioner. The commissioner must make the form available on the department's website. The form must include a notice described in 13.04 subdivision 2. And to expound on that a little bit, the first part is fairly clear. The commissioner prescribes the form and has to put it on the website. The reference there is to the Tennyson warning, which is something in the Data Practices Act that requires the government to put a notice on a document when they are collecting data that explains to the person what that data will be used for.
Members, Tennyson notice is something that is fairly common, but please feel free to ask any questions that you may have or indicate if you wish DPS to come to the testifying table. Any discussion or questions? Seeing none, Senator Hall, would you make the motion for the oral amendment that Ms. Stengel just mentioned or just stated?
So moved.
Any questions with respect to the oral amendment that Ms. Stengel just mentioned? Representative Tate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make everyone aware that I've spoken with the House author of the bill, and she is very comfortable with the changes that have been made here. So I don't think you probably need to hear from her, but just wanted to make sure that everyone knows that this is comfortable with the House author of the bill.
Thank you for that, Representative. Seeing no more discussion, all those in favor of the oral amendment by Senator Hall, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion passes. The amendment is adopted. We are now on the provision. And Ms. Stengel, would you please state the motion for the amendment as or the provision as amended for Senator Hall?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The motion would be to adopt House Sections 79 and 81 as amended, and they appear on R-117 and R-118.
Senator Hall, is that your motion?
Yes.
Any further discussion? Chairman Hornstein.
Thank you, Chair Newman, and I just wanted to thank Representative Moeller, Senator Isaacson, and of course Mitchell. We had a very powerful and effective hearing on this legislation in the House, as I think you had on your side, and I'm very, very pleased that we can pass this and incorporate it into our conference committee report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any further discussion or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Hall's motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion passes, and the provision is adopted. Congratulations, Mitchell. Okay, we will now move on to item number 5, which is the Law Enforcement Memorial Association plates issue. That is something that I know was in the Senate. I do not see a provision in the House. Ms. Stengel, could you explain that provision, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Looking on line 5 of the document, timestamp 231, you'll see that this provision appears on page R87. It is Senate Section 38, and what this does is it relates to a specialty plate that's already in law, the Law Enforcement Memorial Association plates. And what it does is when people make that extra contribution for those plates, they go into an account, and this provision will require the commissioner to annually disperse that money to the Law Enforcement Memorial Association to further the purposes of their group.
questions or discussions from members? Seeing none, Chairman Hornstein, if I request Ms. Stengel to state the motion, would you be happy to move that? Ms. Stengel, if you would state the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The motion would be to adopt Senate Section 38 on page R87.
Chairman Hornstein.
I would make that motion to adopt R87.
All those in favor of Chairman Hornstein's motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion passes, and the provision is adopted. We are now on item number six, which is the snow and ice appropriation issue. That appears to be a House version or a provision. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, this language is found on page R128, House Section 92. This was originally a proposal from the Department of Transportation. It would modify a contingent appropriation that currently exists in statute based on expenditures for snow and ice management. The modification would be to calculate against expenditures on an annual basis instead of biannually and change the percentage threshold. So it drops the threshold down from 110% of the biennial identified amount to 100% on an annual basis. And these funds would come from the Trunk Highway Fund to the extent that there are unappropriated balances in the fund.
Questions by any members regarding item number six? Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm just wondering if we could get a little information as to why we're dropping from 110 to 100. It would seem to me that the 110% was maybe put in there to show that there was a lot of extra spending for that purpose. And so I guess I'd just like a little bit of an explanation. Why I get the moving from semi or from biannual to annual, but I'd like a little explanation as to the percentage.
Is MnDOT in the room that could someone come down and answer Senator Rarick's question? Thank you for coming down. Please state your name, with whom you are associated, and if you need Senator Rarick's question repeated, just indicate so and we'll do that.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Josh Kinnard-Hubinger. I am the budget director at MnDOT. I will answer your question directly. So the biennial, the way the language is written now, we can't trigger that contingent appropriation until we hit the biennial total. So for this current biennium, if last year was particularly bad, we wouldn't have been able to access that contingent appropriation. So that's the logic there. The intent in the first place of the appropriation was to, in winters where we exceed our original budget amount, being able to use Trunk Highway Fund balance instead of cutting into other activities such as spring maintenance, things like that. That's typically the approach. So that's the argument for cutting it down to 100. If the way we've done it in the past is eaten into spring activities or come back to the legislature during the spring and ask for additional funds. So it just provides more flexibility for managing snow and ice costs.
Senator Rarick. Any other further questions or discussion? Seeing none, do I hear a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Chair Hornstein moves that the committee adopt Section 92 of the House version. All those in favor of Representative Hornstein's motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion passes. The provision is adopted. Next is number seven on our list, which is the asset management issue. That appears to be a House provision. Mr. Burris, would you explain that to us, please?
Mr. Chair and members, this is found on page R122 of the side-by-side. It's House Section 88. This would direct the Commissioner of Transportation to maintain an inventory of various types of specified assets, including bridge, geotechnical, pedestrian, and bike and transit asset categories. And it requires that the initial inventories would need to be in place by December 15th of 2021.
Mr. Chairman, if I recall correctly, is this a Representative Bernardi provision?
Yes.
I'm on the right one? Okay.
All
right. Any further questions or discussion regarding item number 7 from committee members? Seeing none, do I hear a motion?
I'll move it, Mr. Chair.
Chair Hornstein moves that we adopt Section 88 of the House version. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion passes and the provision is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Burris.
If I might refer committee members back to the first provision, I just wanted to highlight a
Mr. Burris, the first provision of
On the list on wheelchair securement.
Yes.
The committee's adoption of Section 137, Paragraph A, I neglected to note there are actually multiple provisions being repealed within that paragraph. So I think the staff understanding would be that one portion of that is what's intended of the committee at this point. The remaining pieces, or the one other provision in that repealer, has to do with the move over law that had been enacted in prior legislation. So it wouldn't be necessary to include that in the conference committee report. So just to be clear,
Mr. Burris, are you saying that it is not necessary for another motion in order to adopt this provision fully?
Mr. Chair and members, I think it is probably sufficient to have highlighted that it would just be the repeal of sections 299A12 subdivision 4 and 299A.18.
Thank you, Mr. Burson, and I would simply direct staff then to make those appropriate changes as necessary in accordance with Mr. Burris's recommendation.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. We now are, what would this be? What is the term? We are now on item number 8, which is the agricultural products special permit issue. There are two provisions, one in the House, one in the Senate. This is one that I believe Representative Torkelson is interested in. First, I'll have Mr. Burris explain it, and then I will come to you, Representative Torkelson. Mr. Burris, do you wish to explain this to us?
Mr. Chair and members, this is a provision that is found in both House and Senate. It's House Section 72 to 74, Senate Section 79 to 81. There are some technical differences, and a lot of the substance is the same between the House and Senate, and this is on a special permit for agricultural products. Both House and Senate create a definition of what agricultural products would qualify for transport under the permit, and it specifies things such as livestock, crops, fluid milk. The Senate language includes additional items, fertilizer and agricultural lime, in situations where the transport does not need to be placarded under federal regulations, and that provision is what is not included in the House language.
And Mr. Burris, state again, what is not included in the House language?
What's not included, Mr. Chair and members, is in the definition of agricultural products, natural and commercial fertilizers, potash, and agricultural lime. So those, in other words, those would not be able to be transported under the permit. in the if the House provision were adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. After doing some work on this and understanding a little better that this is actually quite controversial, I did look at the Senate language and the effort to include natural fertilizers seems to be appropriate, but it's not well defined. So that's why I've selected the term livestock manure, because everybody understands what livestock manure is, I believe. And so that would add that one additional provision to the House language as number six. And but we would not, under this recommendation, adopt the other portions of the Senate language.
So if I understand correctly, Representative Torkelson, what you are proposing to do is offer the A-108 amendment to the House version. Is that
correct, Mr. Chair. The A-108 applies to the House version of the language. I'm not sure the Senate's taking this entirely as seriously as they should.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Kaczynski, I have not recognized you. And I'm not at all sure I want to turn you loose on live manure. Senator Kaczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Parkinson. Yeah, you really, you know, we can't pass this up with having a little funny joke about it. But I won't. In the essence of time, I will not.
Thank you, Senator Kaczynski. Representative Torkelson, you are formally offering the A-108 amendment to the House version of this provision. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd move the A-108.
Any further discussion on the A-108 amendment to the House version? Chairman Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, I've had a chance to talk to Representative Torkelson about this and some of the stakeholders on this issue, and I do support the Torkelson amendment and the House language, the amendment to the House language.
And members, given the district that I represent, I am also somewhat familiar with Representative Torkelson's amendment, and I also support the A-108 amendment. Any further discussion? Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I occasionally drive through your districts with my windows down, so I'm familiar with the amendment, too.
Point taken. Any serious further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A-108?
I was just complimenting Senator Dibble on us.
A-108 amendment to the House provisions. All those in favor of the A-108, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment to the House version is adopted. We are now on the House version of this provision, section 72 through 74. Senator Hahn or Mr. Hahn, you had something that you wanted to add to this. Please welcome to the committee. State your name, who you represent, and provide us with the testimony if you wish to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is David Hahn. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Township Association. I appreciate the consideration for just a couple of minutes in the course of reading through the language in the conference committee report, and not sure what the amendment that Representative Torkelson was going to bring. And actually, our board of association board is meeting yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and this kind of came up in a conversation, and I said, well, I'll be here, and if possible, I'll ask the question. And the question is simply this. As I understand the language, it is expanding the permit to operate a vehicle overweight to certain things that are not already included in law. And the question is, if somebody doesn't obtain a permit, what is the penalty that adheres to that operator?
Discussion. Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Chair, I do not know the answer to that question. Perhaps there's someone in the audience who does.
Colonel Langer? Colonel Langer has deferred. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name, with whom you are associated with, and if you need the question repeated, we will do so.
Mr. Chair, members, John Olson with the Minnesota State Patrol. To answer your question, the permit is considered the legal weight of the vehicle, so the appropriate charge would be any weight that exceeds the permit. And then our office would also issue a second citation for violating that permit. So it'd be two charges. That answers your question.
Mr. Hamm.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And just so that I understand, so the language says that a road authority may issue a permit. And if they do not issue a permit and someone is operating without a permit, they would have to be stopped by the Highway Patrol in order for that to have a penalty to attach to it. Is that my understanding?
Mr. Olson, Trooper Olson.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, that's correct. We would have to be able to stop that vehicle.
And Mr. Chair?
Mr. Hamm.
The concern, I guess, that townships have is I don't think we are regularly, our roads are patrolled, are not patrolled regularly by the Highway Patrol. And so I think there is some concern about the damage that overweight trucks may cause or heavy trucks may cause to township roads. And if there is no recourse for a township to secure any penalty for people who are operating overweight vehicles, then it seems like this is, in a sense, a blanket authorization to operate overweight vehicles on township roads with no penalty at all. And we are concerned about that. So I don't have any amendments. I don't have any. This may be outside the scope of what this particular provision calls for, but I just wanted to raise that concern given the funding that is needed by townships to keep their roads in good shape and the fact that overweight vehicles do cause substantial damage. So that's just my comment.
And I would respond in this respect that this matter, I can't speak for the House, but this matter was heard in the Senate, and the types of concerns that the townships are now bringing forward are legitimate, but I think were previously considered by the Senate in our hearings. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just add that, you know, the overweight permit already exists. The changes in language here are really just to clearly define to which agricultural products it applies. So we're not adding a new permit. We already have the issue of overweight trucks on township roads, and it's a real issue. I'm not denying that by any means. But this particular change in legislation only deals with the definitions of what those products are.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion. Do I hear a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson moves that we adopt Section 72, 73, and 74 as amended on the House version. All those in favor? Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, just in reviewing, I noticed that there is an additional section that is technical in nature that would go along with this. It's Section 136, Paragraph B. It's a revisor's instruction that would reorder the subdivisions in this section so that the definitions would come first.
And Representative Torkelson, I would assume you are willing to modify your motion to encompass what Mr. Burris has just described.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would do so, and I'd like to make my motion that this be adopted as amended.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Representative Torkelson's motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion passes. The provision is adopted. We are now on item number 9, which is paper product special permit. It would appear that there are provisions in both the House and the Senate. I'll go first to Ms. Stengel and have her explain the Senate's version, and I'll come back to Mr. Burris. Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The language you're looking for is on page R111. It is Senate Section 78. Sorry, I should say it starts at the very bottom of 110, but the changes are actually on page R111. And the Senate version, let me back up a little bit. So the statute governs special three-unit vehicles, special two-unit vehicles, and oversized tire hauling permits. And in Clause 5, it amends the route for all of those vehicles. So these vehicles can drive anywhere on Trunk Highway 53 instead of just between Virginia and the Port of Duluth.
Sure.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the House language on this special permit specifies the types of products that are commodities that can be transported under the permit for three and two unit vehicle combinations, identifying paper products or iron ore tailings. The House language also retains the current routing that's in current law for another special permit that's also codified in this section for hauling earth mover tires.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. I'm going to ask Ms. Stengel to make some further explanation on this issue. It's a little confusing. Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So you'll see on the grid that we've been working from under proposed changes, there are some house lines that are could potentially be adopted, and you will see that they are part of House Section 71, but not all of House Section 71. And what the changes there would be on R110 would be to adopt the two lines at the bottom of the page, 103, 19, and 20, and then on page R11, it would be to adopt House Lines 103.21 to 104.22, so that's subdivision 1 and 2. The significance of that is that it pulls in the references to paper products and iron ore tailings, but it does not make the route change for the tire haulers that you would see in subdivision 3. So the effect of adopting that proposed change would be sort of to merge the House and the Senate.
And I'm going to conclude that that is in effect a recommendation to the members that we merge the two, as explained by Ms. Stengel. But certainly, members have further questions. We will do our best to answer them. Members, if it's of any help to you, I can tell you that Senator Tomassoni is involved in this issue and has requested that we adopt language as outlined by Ms. Stengel, as it in particular impacts a business of his in his district up in northeastern Minnesota. Further discussion? Seeing none, Ms. Stengel, if you could state for us an appropriate motion, and then I will ask for a member to, Senator Jasinski would move the provision. Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The motion would be on page R110 to adopt House Lines 103.19 to 103.20. And on page R111 to adopt House Lines 103.21 to line 104.22.
Mr. Chair, so moved.
Further discussion to Senator Jasinski's motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Jasinski's motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion passes, and the provision in the motion is adopted. We are now on the Floodwood rest area issue, which is number 10 on the list. It looks like this is a House provision. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, this is found on page R161 and is in section 122 at the very bottom of that page. And this would modify a law from a number of years ago so that Flood would not be required to operate and maintain a rest area that would be conveyed to it. And you can find the main change on page R163 of the side-by-side.
Hey, Mr. Burris, for some reason this is confusing to me. If you could do it one more time. I apologize. I'm just having a difficult time following this one.
Mr. Chair and members, so a 1994 law directed the Department of Transportation to convey a rest area to the city of Floodwood and also directed the city to operate and maintain the rest area as a rest area.
Yes, sir.
The change under the House provision would retain that that conveyance of land, but would no longer direct Floodwood to operate and maintain the rest area as a rest area. So this would have the effect of a conveyance of the property and leave flexibility to the city as to how the property would then be used.
Mr. Lee, would that then be a savings to the state?
Mr. Chair and members, yes. The fiscal note for this bill, when it was in committee, showed a savings to the Trunk Highway Fund of $58,000 a year.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Discussion or questions? Discussion. Seeing none, do I hear a motion?
I will move that, Mr. Chair.
Chairman Hornstein moves adoption
section 122.
Section 122 of the House version. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion passes. The provision is adopted. Bill. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, now we have the money to pay for the State Academy signs.
We finally get some money put back in the Trunk Highway Fund, and you want to pull it back out. Okay. We are now on item number 11, which is the Southwest Light Rail Safety Meetings, which is a House version. First, I will have Mr. Burris explain it, and then I will come to you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, this is found on page R-170, House Section 131. This would direct the city of Minneapolis to provide rail safety meetings at least annually each year during the construction of the Southwest Light Rail Transit Project, and identifies officials and entities that would be invited to attend the meeting.
Chairman Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This impacts the area that Senator Dibble and I represent, and if the committee, I'd prefer that we defer action on this. I would like to have one more follow-up conversation with the city. But basically, you know, that's a very involved construction project. There are a number of routes that are, you know, cut off, and there's been a lot of concern about safety issues during construction, and there hasn't been enough, I think, in my opinion, a conversation involving our constituents. So I would just like to have one more follow-up conversation before we take action, and I think it is needed, but you know, we may want to refine the proposal.
Senator Dibble, what would your position be on Chairman Hornstein's request?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will defer to Representative Hornstein's request. I did check in with the city lobbyist, and he indicated as of today he has received no concern from the city, but indicated he was intending to go back and check again. So I don't know what no concern means, like a little amorphous. I will say, though, just for members' information, Representative Hornstein and I do have a very good and positive working relationship with the fire chief, who's also the, you know, chief safety officer for the city, and he desires and is very willing to have this sort of interaction with all of the stakeholders and relevant entities as well as the community. I think the question begs, though, who's going to be convening and be basically in charge of making sure those meetings occur.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Seeing no objections, Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I haven't been involved with this, but reading through this language, I guess one thing I don't see in here is an inclusion of any of the construction companies that are involved in the project, and I would maybe look at potentially the general contractor or the prime contractor might be well suited to help facilitate that and should be included.
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rarick, I think that's an excellent suggestion, and when we return to this, I would be happy to entertain an amendment.
With that, we will lay item number 11 aside in accordance with Chair Hornstein's request, and we will move on to item number 12, the OLA financial review. This is a House version provision. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, this is found on page R-177. It's section 137, paragraph B. This would repeal a quarterly review that the Office of the Legislative Auditor is directed to perform currently, and that review is of the financials for the Met Council's transportation district and is submitted to members of the Legislative Audit Commission as well as to the legislature.
Only question I would have, members, is whether or not there was any objection or comments from the Office of the Legislative Auditor on this provision. Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my understanding is that the auditor is in support of this provision. I think we have someone from the office here.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and with whom you are with, and maybe address this issue a little bit for us.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Christopher Boozy. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Financial Audit Division of the OLA. First of all, Mr. Chair and committee members, to address the question deductively, we have no objection to the repeal of the provision. Just to give you a little bit of history, we are required in our statutes to do quarterly reviews of the Metropolitan Transit Agency, and we've done now 7 quarterly reviews with pretty much the same results for the last 7 reviews. We've concluded that the revenues exceed the expenditures, that the balance sheet for the organization is in fairly good shape, that their debt is in fairly good shape, and that their reserves are in compliance with the statutes. So we've done this work for 7 quarters, and rather than repeating the same message over and over again, we are requesting this repeal so that we can use our limited audit resources to focus on topics on our list right now that are more pertinent and more important to the legislature.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions or discussions on this matter? Seeing none, do I hear a motion?
I would move adoption of House Section 137B.
Further discussion to Chair Hornstein's motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion passes. The provision is adopted. We are now on the speed limits local issue. There are provisions in both the House and the Senate. I'll go to Ms. Stengel first, and I'll come back to Mr. Burris. Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The Senate section is on page R-97, and this has to do with city speed limits. You'll see Senate section 60 on R-97. Paragraph B is a new paragraph, and basically it allows the city to establish a speed limit on city streets other than those provided by statute. And this applies only to city streets, not to town or county roads or trunk highways. And the city must do so in a I forget the exact language, but a coherent and reasonable manner, and then it must post signage.
Mr. Bruce.
Mr. Chair and members, the health provision relating to speed limits is found on page R95. It's health section 49. This modifies a definition of residential roadway, expanding what constitutes a residential roadway so that it would include areas that are zoned for housing that aren't where the roadway itself isn't a collector or an arterial street. This would have the effect of broadening the cases where a city would be able to, or a town would be able to set a 25-mile-an-hour speed limit, which is lower than the statutory default of 30 miles per hour.
It looks like, members, in either provision, city has the authority to affect the speed limit. The question looks to me like on which roads. I believe, Senator Dibble, this is your provision, if I'm not mistaken. You want to give us a little guidance on this?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So I did read the House language, section 49, on page R95, lines 90.5 to 90.8. And I'll just ask counsel to help me indicate whether or not these two are, the way I read it, they're not mutually exclusive. We could adopt both of them, and they wouldn't really affect each other that much. What I read in section 49 is a redefinition of, or a definition of what a residential roadway is. And, you know, I accept that it has implications for what a city can do in terms of speed limits, setting the speed limits or determining the speed limits for themselves on the newly defined residential roadway, although I don't completely understand why that is, but I accept that. And then Section 60 on the Senate language on page R97, starting at line 53.10, really at 53.24, really sets forth the circumstances in which cities can establish speed limits for the roadways that they own and control within the city boundaries, whether that is a residential roadway or some other kind of a roadway. It's an arterial or a collector or something like that. And the city is further required to conduct safety engineering, traffic analysis in the context of industry guidance and research, et cetera, and also communicate the change to the public. So there's a process that they have to undergo before they actually change those speed limits. And so it sets forth a fairly comprehensive approach to the idea of allowing cities to set their own speed limits on the roads that they own and control, which I'll add I support and would like to see adopted, and am fine with the House language being adopted as well if, in fact, they're not mutually exclusive or in conflict with each other.
I'm going to go to both House counsel and Senate counsel. Senator Dibble feels that they are not mutually exclusive and both could be adopted. Ms. Stengel, your thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think it's an interesting question. I think that they could both be adopted, and if they were both adopted, I think we would have to think about what process the city would follow if they wanted to change the speed limit on a city or town road in a basically on a residential street. Would they have to follow the process in the House language or the process in the Senate language? On the other hand, if you adopt both the House and the Senate language, the House language also applies to town roads, and the Senate language excludes town roads. So there might be a way to sort of merge them together to get to the point that you're trying to get to. I'm not sure that's adopting them both as it is now.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dick.
So my question to the House is how the House feels about the House language. In other words, they want the House language. Or can we let it rest?
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, the House likes the House language. The House also is doesn't have an issue with the Senate language either. And Chair Newman and I were discussing this, and I think there's just general consensus on both sides on this approach. So the question is, you know, really, what is the best motion to incorporate these ideas, which are not mutually exclusive and, in fact, complementary. So I we have no issue on our side moving forward. We've been actually conversing about this, and Representative Elkins is the author on our side, and we've been talking with him, and he's okay with the direction you're taking, Senator Dibble.
If I may, I'm going to maybe suggest that we defer this as we did with the issue regarding the city of Minneapolis. I'm a little nervous about adopting both provisions and then figuring out after the fact that there is some, in fact, some conflict. And I wonder, Senator Dibble, if we laid this aside for right now and bring it back along with the other matter that we deferred on, that maybe you and Representative Elkins could, you know, work out some kind of an agreement. It doesn't sound like it's very complicated, but that would be my request, Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, you took the words out of my mouth.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. The matter is laid aside, and we will come back to it at a future date. That leaves us with the final item on the agenda, and it's 5 o'clock. But we're going to go forward. We're going to take care of this one as best we can. That's item number 14, passing in the driving in the left lane. That is a Senate provision. And I'd ask Ms. Stengel to walk us through it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. There are four sections here. The first is Senate Section 59 on page R96. This is often called the speed to pass provision, and this allows the speed limit is increased by 5 miles an hour when somebody is passing another vehicle on a highway with more than one lane with a speed limit of 55 miles an hour. Senate Section 61 on page R98 requires drivers prohibits drivers from driving in the leftmost lane unless they are passing or one of the other exemptions apply. Senate Section 133 on page R166 is a public awareness campaign on the keep right or don't drive in the far left lane law. And then Section 142 paragraph B on R177 repeals the existing subdivision on slow-moving vehicles. And I will note there's an errant footnote there. You'll see a footnote 1 that doesn't go to anything. That's just a typo.
A footnote to nowhere. This is a Senator Jasinski bill, so I'm going to go to Senator Jasinski at this point for your thoughts, comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for listening to this this afternoon at 5 o'clock. So I believe this is a good bill that provides efficient traffic flow. I think a lot of times everybody's been stuck behind somebody in the left lane, and they get frustrated. There's issues with, you know, irate drivers behind you and road rage and all kinds of things. Is existing now in a two-lane, you can exceed the speed limit by 10 miles an hour to get past a car safely and get back in. What this does is new language from last year. This bill was also here last year, and people had issues with the speed of traffic. So we looked at some other states and found this one, and we put in the 5 mile an hour over to pass and get back in. I believe it's a good bill. I think it's an efficient way. I know there's some concerns about it promotes speeding. I don't believe it does promote speeding. I think the traffic flow, as you see out there, if someone is traveling, even if there's an incorrect speedometer or your tires are the wrong size, there's just an influx in differences in the speed limit. If you're behind somebody and you're going in a 70-mile-an-hour zone and someone's doing 69 and or 70 or 71 and they don't move over, it holds up traffic. I think all of us have seen it going down the road, more in greater Minnesota than in the metro area. I've got a lot of positive feedback on this bill, and I would like to see it pass. But I'm open for comments from the House. I know it did not get a hearing in the House this year. It did last year. So I'm open for a conversation on it, and I would hope we could get it passed. With that, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Discussion. Representative King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if possibly Colonel Langer could come up. I have a question about how this would be enforced. And I definitely get frustrated with this, especially when I'm sitting in the passenger seat and somebody who's driving doesn't move over. But yeah, if If Colonel Langer, how would you imagine that this would be enforced?
Colonel Langer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, first of all, I want to give credit to Senator Jasinski. This has been an issue that he's been passionate about for a long time, and we've worked really hard on the language and made some improvements, some adjustments. To be frank with your question, that's the fundamental concern we have is how to enforce it. Because essentially to enforce it, you'd be pulling over a vehicle and saying, I stopped you because you're driving 70 in a 70 zone and there's two cars behind you that I presume wanted to get around you, so you were in violation. That's effectively how you would do the enforcement, and so we do have concerns as the lead traffic safety organization in taking that type of enforcement action because we have our hands full with drivers who are exceeding the speed limit, not our hands full with drivers driving the speed limit.
Colonel Langer, I would just add that you may not have two cars behind the car in the left-hand lane. You may have a platoon of them. And whether or not someone was 3 miles an hour or 4 miles an hour or 5 miles an hour over the speed limit, I do get it. But I think that road rage is, in fact, an element that we have to deal with in this day and age. And I know not too long ago I read an article about a road rage incident where a man followed someone to their home and took out a gun and killed the little girl in the back seat, all over some stupid road rage issue. So while I really do understand the concern that law enforcement has, I guess as in other matters, law enforcement would have to use a little bit of judgment. And if there is a whole string of cars being held up, somebody is going to get upset and do something stupid. And that, I think, is really what Senator Jasinski's bill is trying to address. It's just is to break that wolf pack and help with the free flow of traffic. So that would be my only comment on this issue. Further discussion? Representative Cable.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Colonel Langer, do you think possibly a public awareness campaign would be a place to start? I know with the Resist the Urge to Merge campaign, you know, that was something that I was just unaware of. And so I think that the success of that campaign could really be a model for maybe instead of putting it in statute or changing law, really just kind of informing the public that just to move over. Do you think that would be a better approach? Or
Representative Cagle, I believe that what you're talking about is already in the bill, but I'll go to Senator Jasinski. He can talk about that.
Yes, thank you, Senator Jasinski. And Representative Cagle, yes, that was added last year. Actually, Senator Dietzick, the DFL side in the Senate, recommended that language to a public awareness campaign, and that's why that bill is added in there to raise the awareness for this. As you sometimes see on the right side, it does say slower traffic, keep right. There's just not a lot of that, not a lot of that signage. So, you know, with now today's day with the digital electronic boards that we have across the state, that would be a great area, and as well as other areas that could advertise that. So that was included in the bill to address that issue.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, I guess my concern is the enforcement issue, you know, how we enforce that. And so maybe starting with the public awareness and seeing if that resolves the issue instead of changing statutes, maybe that would be the best approach. And then if it's something that we need to revisit down the road, that might be a better or, you know, an approach that we could take as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative, what went through my head as you were talking about a public awareness program is an excellent idea, but it, without the underlying statute that you're going to make the public aware of, I'm not too sure what we would be trying to accomplish, but that's just a thought. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can tell you I was very much opposed to this in the past. It had to go through my committee, and I'm one that I go maybe just a little over what I should go. And when somebody butts up back to me it's like there's not a chance. I'm over the speed limit maybe a little bit. And so I tried it. I thought I'm just going to do it like he says and see what happens. And I'll tell you, it was more peaceful driving. I do it now. That's the way I drive. Somebody gets behind me, I move over. I don't care. Go by, I slide back over. And I'm telling you, for me, it has really worked. Not that I had road rage, but I just have a lot more peace. I'm not thinking about that. I'm not thinking about the guy behind me. So I really got sold by it, by trying it out. And I am really for this.
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a couple of additional questions for Colonel Langer. My understanding is that we already have, there is some, we have already in statute some provisions around impeding traffic. Is that correct?
Colonel Langer.
Mr. Chair and Chair Hornstein, that's correct. There already is a statute called impeding traffic. This is a furtherance of that statute. So the person that is truly impeding traffic and causing a problem on the roadway could be stopped and enforced under the impeding driving statute or other laws in Minnesota.
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Colonel Langer. And I share concerns about a message we might be sending to the motoring public about speeding. And I think speeding is accounts for 24%, something like that, of crashes. I'm wondering if you share that concern. Would a law like this send perhaps a mixed message about what we're trying to do in terms of speeding?
Colonel Langer.
Mr. Chair and Chair Hornstein, I share that concern, and the State Patrol shares that concern. We've talked about that with the author, too, about the mixed message sent. We have a problem with speeding on our roads. 22% of fatals within the last 5 years have speed as a contributing factor, 13% of all crashes in the last 5 years. So if you look at just fatalities, about 425 people have been killed in the last 5 years with speed being a factor in the crash. So it is a bit of a mixed message. I would say on multi-lane, more urban areas, you are essentially raising the speed limit by 5 miles per hour. I know that maybe wouldn't be how it would apply it in rural Minnesota or some other areas where there's much less traffic. So the provision that specifically increases the 5 miles an hour, there's never a given time in the area that I patrolled that it wouldn't just raise the speed limit by 5 miles per hour. And if it were just the 5 miles per hour, that's one thing. But we know from experience that kind of give an inch, take a mile, that people tend to push that limit higher and higher on their own based on what they perceive to be the threshold to get pulled over.
One last question. And thank you for that, Colonel Langer. So would it be fair to say that, you know, given your testimony today, that the State Patrol has concerns about this provision?
Colonel Langer.
Mr. Chair and Chair Hornstein, that's correct. So we have concerns with it. We certainly share the sentiment that Senator Hall, Senator Jasinski, Senator Newman, and others have said. If someone's behind you and wants to get around you, of course our public message is let them go around and don't engage with that person. But for the reasons that I've stated, and along with the mixed message and the problem with speeding on our roads and the enforcement application of this law, it's a really tough one for us to do anything but sit here and testify about our concerns with the language.
Senator Jasinski.
Well, I can say later.
Chair Hornstein.
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, I take Colonel Langer's concerns very seriously. And, you know, this amendment, and again, I don't know if it's the exact language, but something similar came up as an amendment on the floor when we were doing the omnibus bill, and we had a debate, a good debate, and it was voted down. So I think there is a House position on this, which I concur with in opposition. So I just wanted to state that. And if there are, I understand, Senator Jasinski, what you're trying to do, and am sympathetic to the concerns that some of the drivers may have, but I do have share the concerns of the Colonel. So I just wanted to state that on the record, and you know, would be happy to, you know, engage in further debate on this.
Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate all the debate, and I have worked very well with Colonel Langer and Captain Olson and several others, so I think that we had some great discussion on this. Just a couple other points. You know, the one other safety issue that hasn't been raised, and I see it, you know, I travel back and forth from Faribault and more, I won't say suburban Minnesota, but more in the greater Minnesota and out in the areas where I think you see this problem a lot more often. What I see is something that offsets is the people passing in the right lane. And the people that go around in the right lane because they're upset, I believe, is almost more of a safety danger than doing that than actually increasing the speed limit by 5, which brings me to a question, and it's to Colonel Langer, and we've had this discussion before. How many actually speeding tickets are given for 5 miles an hour over the limit on a stretch of road like this? And I'll defer that to Colonel Langer just to answer that because I know we've had some discussion on it, and I kind of want that on the public record as well. So,
Colonel Langer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Jasinski, I don't have the exact number, but as I've shared with you, very few people get pulled over and cited for traveling at 5 miles an hour or less in excess of the posted speed limit. You certainly can't get pulled over, but very few people would be cited for it.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And that just brings up my point that we had a discussion with Colonel Langer. This is, last year we had this language with speed of traffic, and we had a lot of concerns over that. What is that? And I think working with a couple others on the committee that the 5 mile an hour actually clarifies it much better. So if they are traveling at 5 miles an hour to get to pass, and that it is up to the State Patrol's judgment if they're passing or not. So if they're not, they could give them that ticket or not. And I understand in the metro area it's a little bit different because everybody's going there, and that's not what this is designed for, so I wouldn't see that happening. But I just think it's a good way to actually say, okay, if you're going 75 and you're passing, you can't get a ticket. But if you're going 76, now's the time to get your ticket. That actually kind of gives that difference up of being over. It more clarifies that you're, you know, going to get a ticket or not, and that could give that area of error a much more defined area that could actually help across the state of Minnesota.
Further discussion? Representative Tapp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to reiterate the House has talked about this already and had an amendment that was defeated on the House floor as it was coming in 1555, so just to make sure everyone reiterate what Chair Hornstein was saying about that. And then I have a further question for Colonel Langer about that: what exists in statute today that hits at this issue? And I believe one of the arguments that was made on the House floor was that this is already basically in statute today. You need to stay to the right unless you're passing someone. Is that accurate, or is that not sharing the issue correctly?
Colonel Lang.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is a current law in the books that's impeding traffic, and it talks about it, I believe, in 169.18. This is much more specific in terms of requirements in addition to increasing the speed limit by 5 to make that maneuver. One thing I'll share, although there is the language about the 10 miles an hour to pass on a two-lane road, the time distance involved, there's some good safety logic between passing a vehicle at 3 miles an hour in excess of the speed limit to get around someone like an RV on Highway 64 or any other route in Minnesota. The goal of that language that passed with primary seatbelt at the same time was to get that vehicle out of the oncoming lane as fast as possible. That's why that 10-mile-an-hour threshold was put in there. That same safety concern is not present on these multi-lane roads because, of course, they're controlled access and you don't have the oncoming traffic issue with the passing maneuver.
Thank you.
Colonel Langer, with the allowable speed limit to go 10 miles an hour over, have you experienced an enforcement problem on those types of highways where you are allowing folks to exceed the speed limit by 10 miles an hour in order to pass another car? Has that proven to be an enforcement problem?
Mr. Chair and members, no, that hasn't really proven to be an issue. We still have certain people that, of course, pass at a speed much greater than 10 miles an hour over. But I think the logic at that time that was so common sense oriented was if you're behind that motorhome that's just doing everything it can to go 53 miles an hour in a 55 zone, it would be impractical to try to pass that motorhome going 2 miles an hour faster than it would be because it would literally take miles to get around the vehicle. So conceptually, it just made sense that you had to go a little bit above the speed limit and that the threshold was 10 to get around that proverbial motorhome going just under the limit.
Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have some great discussion on this. I still think it is a good issue. I think a compromise would be to take the 5-mile-an-hour limit out of this, and leave the other language, which basically says if there's a car behind you, you need to move over. It takes the 5-mile-an-hour out of there, which obviously addresses the concerns of our state patrol. It cleans up the language that's in existing law now to what the language reads other than the 55. And I've had that discussion with Colonel Langer, and I just want to see if he would have any comments on that as a compromise with the 5-mile-an-hour limit. It cleans up the language. It gives the public awareness campaign that would go out, and I think it's a win for the state.
Colonel Langer, your thoughts?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I mean, the language improves by getting that 5-mile-an-hour language out. I still think, you know, we've got a philosophical difference of opinion. Of course, from the state patrol world, we'd love that everyone drives the speed limit, whether you're in the left lane, the left middle lane, the middle right lane, or the right lane. That's our perspective on it. We believe that's the safest for everybody involved. The reality is, of course, that some people drive a little slower and some people drive a little faster. I could ramble on and on. I appreciate the concern and the movement on the language, but it's really difficult for us as a safety-conscious, traffic safety-oriented organization to get our arms around this. So there is that philosophical divide, but I appreciate the movement to try to make it better than it is as it stands today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all I would have. I would offer that we would eliminate, and I think staff can go about that, which they procedurally, but I believe it's eliminating section, let's see, on page R97. I believe it's R97. If staff could help, how that would be done?
Yeah, Mr.
What we'll do is I'll have Ms. Stengel state the oral amendment, and then Senator Jasinski, you can move it. Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The idea is to not adopt the speed-to-pass provision in Senate Section 59. You don't need to take any action to exclude that. We would just you just move forward adopting the other sections. So the motion would be to adopt Senate Section 61, 133, 142, paragraph B.
Senator Jasinski, is that your motion?
So moved. Or yes, that is my motion.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Chairman Horns.
I know we're under some time constraints, but you know, this is an important issue, and you know, I think we would like to seriously consider Senator Jasinski's change here, but you know, the House hasn't had a chance to really talk about it. If it's okay to just have a 5-minute recess, and or if you want to defer till tomorrow, I mean, that's fine too, but we take it seriously. We want to have a good discussion among our members about it. So it's really up to you, Mr. Chair. You know, we're happy coming back tomorrow to talk about it. If you want to get it done today, if we could just have a short recess, that'd be fine too. So sure. whatever you choose, Mr. Chair, is fine.
That is a reasonable request, Chairman Hornstein, and I think given the hour, Senator Jasinski has indicated he'd be more than happy to pick it up tomorrow.
Okay.
And that should give your members plenty of time to discuss it. So we'll defer item number 14, and you can include it in your agenda tomorrow.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you.
With that, we have now concluded our agenda for the day. Chairman Hornstein, any final thoughts regarding the next committee hearing before we adjourn?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for considering a number of House provisions and running a great meeting today. I feel like we're almost done with many of our same and similars, and I think now we are going to be getting into some of the more challenging issues, and we can have a good debate and discussion like we had with Senator Jasinski's provision. And secondly, Mr. Chair, I hope that we'll have maybe some targets in 24 hours, and you know, if that's the case, then I think we'll have to shift gears pretty quickly and work on that. So I think our agenda for tomorrow is fluid, but I do intend to meet tomorrow, and we'll again huddle as a House team and come up with some ideas for you to consider as well, just as you did with us very effectively today. So I imagine we'll try again around 3 tomorrow. I think we're on the same kind of schedule with our floor sessions, and we'll post it and plan to meet tomorrow at 3, continue this the policy discussions with some financial provisions and hopefully some bigger stuff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And with that, we are adjourned.